So what I would like to talk about today is about how SAS and Compass can help with your CSS workflow, how it can help you to code faster and to code more maintainable code and more future-proof code. This presentation will be most useful to CSS themers. It can also be helpful to designers who design for Drupal projects. It can also be helpful for developers just as far as to familiarize themselves with what it takes to build a complete Drupal project. If you're a CSS themer, you probably already use some strategies to improve your workflow. For example, splitting your code into multiple files, putting all of your colors that you use in your project in a big block comment at the top of a file or something similar. But with SAS, you can go much, much further. When you read articles about SAS and about its useful features, one of the first ones that is mentioned is splitting code across files. But since Drupal already comes with an aggregator, and a lot of contributed themes already use this strategy, splitting code into files, this will probably be the least exciting feature for Drupal themers. This screenshot is taken from the Drupal 8 coding standards page for CSS. This year, a discussion has become to revise the coding standards. And as you can see, the splitting into files is already there. The files you see mentioned here are CSS, but the same strategy can be applied to SAS as well. Of course, as a digression, please jump in and contribute and collaborate and discuss about coding standards, at least for CSS if you're a themer. Previous coding standards for CSS recommended to order your declarations alphabetically. And when I started using it, it really helped me to it became faster, especially when you come back to your code and need to debug. You can easily find what you're looking for. So for Drupal 8, this has been dropped, at least for now, and it's recommended to set group your declarations into sets and put a comment above each set, for example, box properties, color properties, etc. But we'll see in the end what will win. Nesting rules is one of the features where beginners really struggle, because when they learn to nest, they start nesting everything. And this, there is a great danger in this, because if you nest too deep, then later, sooner or later, you will encounter difficulties using the cascade and difficulty overriding selectors, previously defined selectors. So don't go crazy with nesting. Some recommend never to nest more than 3 levels deep. So when you see in your code that those brackets are piling up, think twice. Think maybe you're doing something wrong. If you rely on visual indentation to make sense of your selectors, indent them instead of nesting them. But of course, it all depends on your thinking style, whether you need this or not. One thing to mention when nesting is, if you have complex selectors, nest them right away. Even if you want to just style the box class, nest even ID content and class content, for example, so that it's easier to add new styles to any nesting level. Now we come to variables. if you're a CSS themer, you probably wanted this forever, and now we finally have it. If you work on a large project, you can gather up many, many variables. And if you don't create the structure for naming of them, maintaining the variables can become as hard as in pure CSS, like handling different colors, etc. So it's very important to come up with a strategy for your project that makes sense, most sense for you and your project. We see here in the example what it looks like when you name your variables without a pattern. It's a bit hard to remember, but if you have a nice strategy, you will find it easier to manage. And especially if you use an editor that has autocomplete as you type, it will be easier because the editor will suggest as you start typing. You won't have to remember, it won't be hard to remember which words to type first. So also when it comes to variable names, there has been big discussion about how to use them. Many people use descriptive names. For example, for colors, they use names like blue, red, and similar. Why is using descriptive names bad for you? Because if you have many colors and you distribute them all over your files in your CSS project, and you need to make an update and you need to make a change, the client requests a color palette change, it's going to be very hard for you to go back and edit everything. It will be as hard as in pure CSS. Using functional names is much better. So for example, you don't name your variables the name of the color, for example, but the function that they do inside your project. You see some examples here. Text, color, border, color box, background. Of course, this will depend on your particular need. What if we use only functional names in our project? This is better than descriptive names because if you have a color change request, it's going to be easier to update. You just update your variable. You don't have to touch anything inside the other files on your project. But if you have, for example, a lot of colors and a lot of variables, it's still very hard to keep track of what those colors are. So the best strategy is to combine descriptive and functional variable names. As we see in this example, you first define your color palettes with normal hashtag values. And then you define your functional names and apply them values using descriptive variables. And as you can see, when it comes to applying them in code, always use function names. This way, for example, let's say that we have a second color palette here that the client requested a change. The only place where you need to edit it is here inside functional names. You don't have to touch your project code. And remember, this is just for presentation purposes. Don't let the lines misguide you. This code is usually in a different file from this code. Now we come to mixins. Mixins are probably the most useful feature in SAS. If you plan to use SAS, you will definitely use mixins, because if you use just variables and nesting, you're not reaping the benefits. Mixins are sets of CSS declaration. This means that they are like snippets of style. You can pass arguments to them, which is one level of abstraction higher than what we're used to in CSS, but Once you see how they use, you'll probably love it. When doing a project, a CSS themer usually gets a mock-up from a designer. These mock-ups are usually not very complete. Drupal has elements that like Drupal tabs, vertical tabs, Drupal messages that usually don't come in a mock-up. So it's up to you to interpolate and extrapolate from the designer styles to make all of those elements work in your visual site design. So for best results is when you get a mock-up, you analyze it. You see, try to figure out what design elements are there. For example, one style could be for the menus, another for the menus in footer, and so on. And you split up that code into mixins. Mixins are not used until you call them in a selector. But once you have a mixin, you can use it as many times as you like. So this is a real time saver, especially in those cases where you need to interpolate or extrapolate from style. You can use an already prepared code to apply it to a new selector. This is the huge time saver of SAS. Let's see some examples now. These are the buttons you usually see when you go edit a node: save, preview, delete. And this is a mixin that creates these buttons. You can see the hover state here, but you'll have to trust me that when you hover over a button, the background color is darkened a bit because we have a just lightness function with a negative sign. As you can see, in this mixin, there is one argument called base color background. And we use this argument throughout the declarations inside the mixin. It has a default value, which is some type of dark gray, not very dark. But when you're calling that mixin somewhere inside your code, it can be overridden, so you don't have to use the default one. Also, you can see inside this mixin, other mixins are called. So these are from Compass library, which I'll talk about later. So I hope that from this, you can imagine the power that comes with mixins. In the example here, we've styled all of the input form buttons and all of the buttons, if you have them, they rarely appear, with that style. So all of the buttons are going to look like that. They're going to be gray. If you need to override the color, style a button with a different color, all you have to do is call the mixin with a different color as an argument. So let's say that you have a client that requests another feature, and inside that feature you have a lot of different buttons that require a different color palette. It's going to be almost one-liner to apply it. This is another example, very simple one. A vignette is a style that adds a little depth to your box. It adds some shadows, inset shadows, to make it look like that photograph effect of enhancing what is in the center or drawing attention to it. What you see here is more arguments. You don't have to use only one. You can define as many as you like, actually. And of course, when calling the mixin, you can override each of the arguments. For example, what was important for this example is that shadows needed to be adjusted to the box size. If you have a small box, the shadow must be small, and so on. So this is a great time saver, how to use this style across your entire project, because it will be likely that not only one box will be styled with a vignette, because this is a feature of that design. Now we come to Font Awesome. Font Awesome is an icon font developed for Bootstrap, but you can use it in Drupal. Here we see some examples of icons. It seems that lately it's become popular to use font icons for your icons instead of sprites, because with sprites you have to design the icons, export them, create sprites, and if you want some different effect on hover or other states, you have to design more icons and of course include them all in one file and then calculate their positions carefully, etc. Compass library comes with such a feature where you can just have many icon files and Compass will gather them all up in one file and calculate all of the positions for you. It's really magical, but I think that if you have a chance to use an icon font, you will probably go with that option. Font Awesome, of course, is not the only icon font you can use. There are many others. And there's also other modules that you can install for Drupal that provide that functionality. Font Awesome is just one example. You can install it and also unpack the project into libraries folder. But you don't have to use the module if you don't have to. You can include Font Awesome in your own theme with a bit more steps, of course. So why is using icon fonts so interesting? Because those icons are actually just normal letter characters. And they take the color of the font that you apply to them through CSS. You don't have to color icons anymore. And it's very easy to apply colors, color changes for different states, etc. You can increase their size also through CSS with font size, and you won't lose quality because these are letters inside fonts are vector formats. Here is one example of Font Awesome. Up there we see two menu items. The left one is showing the hovered state. These are all done with font icons, meaning that to change the color, all I had to do is change, is applied to the link that where I applied the icon. Font Awesome recommends or uses by default a method of applying icons through an I element, which is a bit, it doesn't create clear markup to include a design element into something that should be semantic. So I didn't like that method. Instead, I used the mixin to apply icons to my menu items. Inside the Font Awesome file, you can find a file that lists all of the variables for the icons. I only copied the ones that I needed for my project. You can see them here. And then I created my mixin. I used the before pseudo selector to insert my icon just before the text inside the menu item. You can see these are all very familiar to you in CSS. One example here is what Sass can also do. This is string concatenating. So once we insert the icon into the content property, we also want to add a space. This is a Unicode for space character, and of course we want to do that because we don't want our icons being glued together to the text. We want some space, and because we're using this method before pseudo selector, it's natural to use just a space between them instead of positioning the icon, for example absolute positioning or similar. On the right side we see how the mixin is called. with one line at include font awesome, and then I applied book icon to all the items that aren't otherwise overridden. But I also wanted to make the icons larger than the text of the link, of the anchor. As you can see, I'm not setting any font size here inside the mixin, but we can override it after applying the mixin in our code. If you don't like overriding mixins in your code, in your code files or the files that are directly compiled into CSS, you can create a bit of a smarter mixin that uses if statements or arguments to decide whether you should use normal font size or larger font size. But this is a bit too complex for this presentation. We can leave it for later if you want to ask me. And at the bottom we see how I overrode the values of the icons for all of the other menu items. Of course, with Sass, it's not all about variables and mixins. There are many other features you can use. Functions, we've already seen some of them where I adjusted some colors. There are functions to do with selectors. For example, if you want to style all headings in a single declaration, you can use that. You can use a function to output all of the selectors, for example. Control directives are going to be very familiar to developers, and maybe they will also give you a hint of how powerful Sass can be when creating themes and creating very complex projects. Of course, you can define your own functions. And I've mentioned Compass before. Compass is nothing more than a library of already coded Sass. There are mixins there, and there are functions, some other helpers. I recommend you use it because it, as you can see from their website, from the reference, these are the CSS3 mixins or helpers. If you use just them, it's going to speed up your workflow because they will take care of all of the browser prefixes and browser differences. And if you get stuck with Sass or want to learn more, go to sasslang.com documentation, find the reference page, and you will find everything that you need there. One thing to mention with Sass is grids based on Sass. You're probably familiar with old style grids that had to use many non-semantic classes in your markup to be able to control the layout reliably. This is not necessary anymore with Sass. Grids based on Sass can create grids, but with beautiful markup, without adding any extra markup attributes. They also are built to be responsive. You can very easily, with media queries, redefine how many columns you want your grid to be based, and redefine the width of your gutters. So grids really save a lot of time you spend otherwise building pure CSS layouts and debugging floats, etc. So I really recommend that you start to use them. It's not hard to learn them. The most prominent ones, I think, are ZenGrid and ZusiGrid. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. ZenGrid, this is probably a familiar name for you because of the Zen theme. ZenGrid is a separate project, even though Zen theme uses Zen grids. But you can use ZenGrid without using the Zen theme. This is one crazy example of what Sass can do. If you go to that website, you will you will find more text shadow craziness. Remember, if this is just with text shadows, imagine what can be done with SAS elsewhere. What you see here in the center is our text. It's a star sign. And we've applied text shadows in the shape of the Lorentz attractor. If you know a little bit of physics, it's from deterministic errors theory. And let's see the code that was used to build it. I hope you can really read it. You will notice that it doesn't resemble CSS much. It looks more like a programming language. So this is to show that how far SAS can go. I hope it can inspire you to investigate further into this. To conclude, SAS and Compass are probably the future of CSS. Even now, when I'm not coding with SAS and Compass, I miss it a lot, even if it's just a short CSS file, a really micro project. If you don't know CSS, don't go into SAS. Learn CSS first and not just the syntax. You need to know to debug style bugs and codes. You need to know how to find out which element style is causing you trouble before you go into CSS, because SAS adds another level of abstraction over CSS. I've heard some negative comments when SAS started to become popular that why should we use SAS? This is just another language but the same output. I hope that this presentation has convinced you that it's not. It's not just a matter of using a different syntax. It's a matter of all of those additional features that make your life easier when coding CSS. As I've already mentioned, mixins are super, super useful. Learn them. If you don't plan to spend a little time on them, don't bother using SAS. It took me around 2 days to learn SAS to a level almost that I am today. So it doesn't take a lot of time to start using it. When I started using SAS for the first time on a project, it did take me a little more time in the beginning to create all of the mixins, to make some design changes, to gather my head, to wrap my head around it. But later, because it was a big project, more and more features were added, and it was super, super easy to style them with one line of code or a bit more lines of code, but it was much, much faster than it would have been with CSS, with pure CSS. Thank you, that's it. Do you have any questions?
Well, for us who don't really know CSS like many developers do, is there any benefits that teamers can prepare for us that we can utilize in our modules to be much more easier than using regular CSS?
That's a very good question, and I think it's a complex question. When looking at contributed modules output, the HTML isn't already super clean. There are coding standards that are published on Drupal.org that you can follow. So my first recommendation is follow the HTML guidelines, because themers rely on them. Themers have to rely on structure. Even though there's a recommendation not to rely on structure, but sometimes you just can't avoid it. And when it comes to CSS and SAS, unfortunately, I don't think that a module developer can afford to assume that Themer will use SAS. So I don't think that you can plan for that benefit, at least not for now. I would have to think about it more.
Okay, so thank you, Mihaela.